Welcome to In the Know with Kat Bobineau. Today, we are going to be talking about Black fathers in STEM. So first, I want to introduce my great co-host, Dr. Tay.
Hi, everyone. Hey.
Hello.
Awesome. And then I want to introduce our two guests. First is Dr. Justin Ballinger, and he is the assistant professor of STEM education at Morehouse College and the deputy director at Atlanta University Data Science Initiative. Then we also have Tavari Williams, who is a financial advisor for multiple nonprofits. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
So I know you guys are in STEM, but we are talking about fatherhood, being Black fathers and in STEM. So first, let's dive into what you do. So Dr. Ballinger, what is your background? What do you do?
I guess a lot of things, but primary at my job is that I work with developing the next generation of Black male STEM educators at Morehouse College, which is the focus of our teacher education program. And then I also work with the Atlanta University Center's Data Science Initiative, where we are looking to use data as a tool for equity, and particularly looking at how data impacts the African diaspora.
Wow, that's dope.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Now, that's our tagline, data is dope.
All right, what about you, Tavari? Can you share with us what you do?
Yes, I am an accountant, level two accountant for a nonprofit. I've been a CFO for a nonprofit, and I've been in a mortgage for over 25 years. So I've always worked with numbers, data, so to speak, when it comes to that. And I love to educate and assist people buy homes and save money where they can or grow their business where they can financially.
Awesome. Yeah, Dr. Tay, you have anything you want to jump in?
I love it. Look, I'm learning because these are people that you know more so. So I'm just like sitting back and learning so much already. I think, first of all, I think it's very interesting the careers that both of you have decided to explore. So I guess my first question is always, you know, I know that you're not over there working like 2 hours a day and, you know, just doing yoga in the middle of the day, maybe taking walks with your dogs and, you know, have so much free time on your hand. You can go fishing every afternoon. So I guess when we think about time balance, way even before we dive into fatherhood aspect, what does that look like? Because sheesh, and this is coming from women in STEM, we know, right? So, so just want to hear, but I've never, ever really have a chance to talk to, you know, fathers in STEM. So I want to really dive into that time balance. What does that look like for you both?
I'll hand it off to the doctor first.
It looks like asking for quite a bit of understanding from the family, because there are number of people that are pulling on you for different things. But, you know, blessed to have a wonderful wife who's very understanding, and she's an entrepreneur in her own right. So just really trying to find that balance, but, understanding that your day isn't a typical 9 to 5 or even, 5 days a week, most weeks, because these are jobs that, follow you home. So like particularly working with the development of young men, there's, evening phone calls and crises that happen, and, you're one of the first phone calls that gets made in some of those situations. And then, working with as an administrator with the Data Science Initiative, we, tend to have many different events. So like we, work with different funding agencies and, writing grants, searching for venture capital with, entrepreneurs that align with the work that we're doing in academia. So it's just, a variety of different functions that happen during the day, because I still like to get my hands dirty in wet science, so I do that as part of my outreach with urban gardening and looking at biotechnology and space, but also with training teachers and outreach with the community. So this is one of the few jobs, I believe, like where you can have an idea, imagine something, and then make it become reality. So that's what excites me about the work that I do, that you can take these different aspects, dream of something, and then work collaboratively with others in order to make that become a reality.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Thank you for, I mean, it still sounds like a lot. So your answer is basically there is no balance.
I'm still seeking, I'm reaching out for it.
But what I like about your answer though is there's some understanding there, there's a lot of communication there, there's collaboration there, and you're still like a lot of fulfillment as well, right? Like I hear so, that in a lot of your answers that you said. So thank you for sharing. I am listening to you. I still kept hearing no balance.
Yeah, I'm seeking it.
Absolutely. So Tamari.
Well, I have to piggyback off of our doctor here, where I would say that being first responders for what we do doesn't give us the room to truly balance like most people would want us to. When I was a CFO for a nonprofit organization, even on vacation, I would have to give up vacation time to resolve a fire. When we look at the fact that money is everybody's livelihood and that I'm in control of over millions, I can't take the time and say, well, I can put that off until Tuesday or Monday or whenever. I got to respond to it right then. Even with our current current nonprofit company that I work for right now, we work with federal, state, county, and city, and private sector money. I'm still a first responder. So I can go wrong. I gotta handle it. Trying to find that balance is hard. You do need people who can understand that you got to drop what you're doing sometimes to get it done. And with three kids, thank God two are grown. You know, it kind of helps with some of that balance. Where my 2-year-old, he wants your attention and he demands it. He like come sit down and watch a movie, and I'm like, well, I got to put this fire out. Watch the movie. But I love what I do. I like when I see people kind of get that, when you can see understanding hits an individual, that little gleam in the eye where you're like, I understand this now. I like that. I like this. I feel like I've accomplished something when I can get someone to understand and then implement.
So. Nice. That's actually what I was going to ask next, which is, you know, how did both of you decide to go into your STEM careers? And is that something that you had already planned or thought of from the beginning, or did your path bring you there eventually after you went and experienced elsewhere? Right.
Yeah, I'm going to say the second one for me, because I initially went to school to become an attorney, and life made me get into STEM.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, my job didn't exist when I was in college, so.
Right. But I like the journey, and I like where I'm at.
Okay. And I'm hearing the same from you, Dr. Bellinger.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely a variety of experiences. So, started my career as a ecologist, field biologist, and ended up in a middle school classroom after a couple of years in the field, and fell in love with becoming an educator. And after I went on to get my PhD in curriculum and instruction for STEM education, I went on into teacher education, and then kind of bridging that gap for engineering and science programs, because we know that a lot of especially our students, when they enter those undergraduate programs, that they may be underprepared. And many of those programs, it's actually a weed out mentality, as opposed to nurturing the students that enter into those fields. And so really working hard to change those paradigms, which many of them are rooted in struggles that we faced as a people since we've been in our country. So, just really working to, look at different ways of knowing, different ways of being, and how we can, bring along the variety and diversity of students into our STEM field so it makes us stronger as a nation.
Absolutely. I definitely applaud both of you for your work. It seems like it's making an impact from what I'm what I'm hearing from you. I know I haven't been directly involved in your work or seen it in person, but you know, your words speak for itself already. What you're saying is already resonating and going beyond the words coming out of your mouth. So I absolutely applaud both of your work and the impact that you're making on society, whether it's the neighboring community or even outside of that. People are going to hear this today and even be motivated by that as well, right? So I think that's amazing to hear your story. But we have that other aspect coming. It's coming, that fatherhood aspect. I don't know if you want to start, Kat, because there's something that you said, Justin, that stuck with me, which is the paradigm of things, right? And I know you were speaking in reference to the communities that you work with. But for me, I think it's very interesting that there are certain questions that women in STEM are always asked. And I never hear men in STEM being asked those questions when it comes to fatherhood versus motherhood. So I'm going to be bringing those questions here. Okay. I'm excited for that portion. So I don't know if you want to kick it off, Kat.
Well, I was going to say, before we jump into those questions, I wanted to ask Justin about getting a PhD in science curriculum. I don't think most people realize that that's a career that you can go into and that it's still STEM-based, but now you're advocating for teachers and professors and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit more about that field and getting a PhD in that field?
So I attended Clemson University for my PhD. And so, you know, it was a growing field, like when I obtained my PhD in 2015. But STEM education for curriculum and instruction there consisted of a variety of things, because it was, you know, basically preparing you for preparing secondary educators, but also working in that college space for STEM curricula. So you spend a lot of time looking at, you know, pedagogy, andragogy, so how we teach children, how we teach adults. Also, we had to do rotations in the hard sciences. So my two rotations were human-centered computing and in the bioengineering lab. Where we were, you know, working alongside researchers in those areas. And then, you know, as part of our projects was actually taking that discrete research and then translating it into, you know, how do we teach this, you know, both at the secondary level and if we're looking at college students, you know, what are some methods and strategies for making sure that we're transferring, you're able to transfer this knowledge in ways that are meaningful to them. And so it's a, one of the interdisciplinary fields, but I think it affords, you know, people that are in this space the ability to work across some of the disciplines that may have been siloed in the past. And, you know, as we look at the way we're progressing, that more of these connections are needed in order to support, you know, proper education for our students so that we're competitive on the world stage. And then as we look at the development of, you know, teaching and learning, like many of the careers that'll be here in 20 years, just like the career I'm in, we don't know what they are. So, you know, what are the strategies for, you know, training students to think critically and to prepare them for careers that we're not even aware of their existence at this point?
Yeah. I think that's very important, because when we start talking about education, especially with different age groups, we also start integrating the thought process about the generational changes, right? And we have the generation now, is they don't necessarily think the way I like to still call myself young. So they don't necessarily think the way I was thinking when I was growing up, or even older generations beyond there. So that means your method in education has to change as well, right? In order to actually connect to that group. And then also a customized way of teaching an individual, because beyond that, their environment they were raised in, the people they were raised by, if there were anyone in their lives growing up and so on, all those things impact an individual's ability to learn whatever the subject is as well. One thing that I've been showing in a lot of the work that I've done in the past was having something that connects them to the topic itself. Whether it's like, if you're going to go in a class and talk about stem cell and the class's majority, or cells in the class's majority Black and brown population, you may want to talk about like blood cell issues and the diseases that are associated with it, and then make that disease connection to the population that you're actually talking to bring that the relevance to the research, and then that connects to the career, right? So I completely understand everything you're saying. I just don't understand I don't think everyone is still capturing the complexity to that, right? There's a lot of different levels and stages. And I'm glad there's now programs that are geared towards that.
Right. To me, it's like equating going to med school. I mean, you're going to have residencies. You're going to go and learn all these different disciplines. And then you can pick your discipline, right? But you're all encompassing. So you know how to do a little bit of a lot of things. So that's kind of how I equate the work of going into STEM education and curriculum is being able to dabble from chemistry and biology and you know, marine biology, like we were talking about earlier, and be able to present that. So I appreciate, thank you for breaking that down. I do want to remind anyone who is watching live right now, whether on Facebook or YouTube, that you can put comments and questions in the chat. We do see them. So Alon said, good evening, everyone. Looking forward to tonight's podcast. Deshaun said, peace and blessings. And John said, yes, community resilience must include STEM to address MIRA changes in all parts of the nation. Absolutely. I totally agree. Right.
And you know, I'll mention one other aspect of my training that I think was, you know, probably, you know, most important. I went through a program, the Call Me Mister program, that recruits and trains males of color into teaching, and served as the graduate assistant for the 5 years that I was working on my PhD. And, you know, I just believe that connection to the human element and, you know, really understanding self and developing cultural competence in this field, where we know that, you know, when we think about teachers, Black males make up 2% of teachers nationwide. And we think about STEM educators, we're the 0.2% of those educators in the nation. And so, you know, really understanding that sense of purpose, how do we make, you know, these topics where, you know, students are asking, when am I going to use this? Why does it matter? Connect to them in ways that are meaningful. So that they, you know, consider these things that could be the start to a lucrative career and help them to build strong families.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much. So I think we've kind of covered the STEM. We can come back to STEM, but let's talk about fatherhood, right? So being a father, so one of the things that Dr. Tay mentioned earlier is the difference of being a mother and being a father. And in a recent podcast that we did where we talked about mothers in STEM, you know, it was brought up that there's that, not, I don't know, I don't want to use the word misconception, but there's that thought that mom has to do everything, right? She has to give up the career. She has to stop, or she has to do X, Y, and Z, while dad is out going and pursuing his dreams or doing the work, going to his job. But it's a misconception and things are changing. And so how do you guys feel about that? You know, we lose a lot of women in STEM when they become moms because the job cannot handle a woman being away for so long. But how do you guys feel about that father versus mother in the work field, especially in STEM?
Well, I can say being a father in STEM, the question is asked, well, where's the mother if I have to leave work early for my kids? Well, why can't she do that? I guess you would say the rest of the world has not adopted or accepted that we have fathers who want to be equal contributors into the rearing and the nurturing and the education of their children. It's still kind of that old school concept. The mom should be able to do it all. And, you know, which is not true. I know I have to explain, quite often sometimes that, no, I'm the father. So it's my responsibility to take care of my child as well.
Yeah.
So it does become hard. Go ahead, Dr. Bola.
Yeah, and yeah, just you know, understanding the importance of the father's presence there. That you know, my wife and I, we work you know very hard as a team. As I mentioned, she's an entrepreneur, so like you know, just really working hard to manage schedules. But as a faculty member, there's some flexibility there. And then with a lot of the work that I do in outreach, there are some wonderful opportunities to take my kids to work with me. when there are, you know, certain events that are happening. So, you know, I'm known for having my gaggle with me when we're doing some outreach events and, you know, exposing them to those things. And then just really making sure that that time is spent, because myself being the son of a Baptist minister who was, you know, present in my life until he passed away when I was the age of 15, just really understanding in the community that I grew up, you know, that difference of having my father there and, you know, my brothers and I being, you know, I graduate in a class of 465 students. And, you know, out of that, you know, our school was about 50-50. You know, so if you're guesstimating about 120 of those would have been Black male students, four of us attended college and graduated. And from the community that I'm from, in our age group, my brothers and the two of us were like the only ones out of, you know, Fairmont, South Carolina, that attended college that are in our, you know, age range. And there were some, you know, older, you know, Black males that came out of the, you know, surrounding communities that served as mentors and, you know, to this day, you know, some that I call on. But, you know, that was not a common thing in the community that I came from for that to happen. And so just really realizing that, you know, even looking at them, each of those came from homes with strong fathers that were present and, you know, making sure that they were where they needed to be. And just wanted to make sure that even in all of the work that you're doing for the community, that you don't lose, you know, your most, you know, important role, which is making sure that the young people that you've been assigned, you know, make it to, you know, their predestined end. So that yeah. is, you know, priority for me.
Yeah. I think there was no better way of saying that, right? I appreciate that. So there was something that reminded me of our previous conversations with mothers in STEM, which was something that both of you were hinting to. I kind of want to draw it out a little bit more, which is, you know, bringing your kids along with you to see what it looks like to be a male in STEM or in your STEM career and what impact that has created or the importance of the purpose behind that. If both of you can talk more into that.
I could say that when COVID-19 was present and we sheltered in place, so I could have Carter in my video conferences and, you know, him seeing that I'm working and having a meeting and you know, everybody's, oh, look at him, you know, but him seeing that and say, daddy's working, and him to repeat, daddy working? And, you know, it kind of, you know, it does something to you as a father, like as a man, you're like, yeah, daddy working, this is what we do. And then to take him into my office and show him around, this is what daddy says, this is where he works, the whole nine. I think for him to see it, it helps him understand it, but then it gives your coworkers an understanding that, no, he has other obligations and he's trying to balance this all. And that, you know, we take our work and our integrity is everything, because that's what we're trying to pass on to our kids, is our integrity. Your word means something, your work ethic means something, your accountability, your ownership of your mistakes means something. You know, to have him see that or see me implement that, where, you know, there's times where we're at home, I'm working from home, and I have to, that was my mistake, and I'll get that corrected and make that right. And for him to hear that, where he'll stop what he's doing to listen and look up at me and like, what are you saying? And from him to see how busy I am to repair or correct a mistake, I think it, you know, for him to see that shows him that this, you know, when I say I made a mistake, that I have to fix it. It does something.
And, you know, I think, you know, like having that ability to bring your kids to work at different times, you know, especially as, Tavari mentioned with, you know, during COVID, like I manage a research team, and like the majority of the individuals on the research team were actually women. And I think it humanized us a lot for everybody to be, you know, your children are in the background and, I know, like, there were a few times that, one of my doctoral candidates that graduated 2 years ago, she was afraid to tell me, like, when she had asked me to be her chair, that she was having a baby. And, like, when she told me that she was having a baby, I told her, oh, you know, I'm not a mother, but, you know, I was married and we had two children while I was working on my PhD, and I made it. You're going to make it. And, yeah, not only did she graduate, but she actually finished her degree program a semester early. And I just think that humanization and not feeling as if your children are a burden while you're at work, but that's a blessing. That, you know, like when, you know, a baby's crying, that, you know, nobody's upset that that happened, or, you know, if a child walks through the background on a Zoom call, that it doesn't end everything, and, you know, they don't feel like, you know, oh, you're being unprofessional, or you have to hide the fact that you're a parent. I think it really humanized us and allowed us to actually get more done in a lot of ways, because there was a more of a willingness to share if there are these different things that are happening that might hinder us, so that we were able to schedule around those things. So if, you know, someone needs to take their child to the doctor, because there's that understanding, there's not, you know, I'm trying to hide that this is happening, and someone drops the ball, but it's on the schedule. Oh, I have you. I'm going to take care of this, that, or the other to make sure that we don't miss it. And I think it really helped us to work efficiently during the time of the pandemic. And it's something that I'm, you know, working hard now that we're transitioning back into person, to, you know, move even more of that aspect into the work that we're doing in person, so that, you know, again, it's a team and a family that's taking care of each other, not, you know, just feeling like you have to keep up, and that if, you know, you are showing this side of you as a family person, that it takes away from your career.
I think you're absolutely correct with the humanizing aspect to that. I mean, it's very often that I have been, you know, interacted with individuals. And I think the next question, it led me to the next question, which is, you know, did you ever have a time where you sat down and was like, when is the best time for me to start making kids while in my STEM career or STEM journey? Because that's often the question. And you brought it up with your PhD candidate, right? But that's a very common question that I've heard mostly and probably only from women in STEM. So this is my first time being able to ask, once again, one of those questions that I've always wanted to ask males in STEM. You know, did you ever have that moment where you were like, I sat down and I was like, I don't know when is the best time to expand my family, and I was being strategic. Was that ever a part or a phase that you, either one of you, have gone through?
I could say it just occurred. When it happened, it was like, and we got to move forward. What are we going to do? You know, I will never forget when I got the news Carter was coming in. I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be unique. Not that I haven't done it before, but it's going to be unique at the age that I am now. And we're going to figure this out. And thank God for knowledge, experience, and science in itself. A lot of things have to go digital to make it work. Because it, you know, I was always taught growing up that if you can enjoy the intimacy, be responsible for everything that comes with it. And so I just don't, as Dr. Bowler says, it's important to have a male figure in the house, and hopefully it is the father. But I grew up without a father. So my cousin was my surrogate father, and he was in the Navy. So there was a lot of times I didn't have him. And there's a difference. There's a difference when you're trying to figure out who you are, what you want to be, and how to press forward with the resistance of just being who we are, where there's a role that a young man is taught, and it's not always taught to be in the household. You're a provider, whether you're in the household or not, but to be accountable for life in itself, and their upbringing, it's a different world. It's different, because when you're being, before humanization at your job, at what we do, you're accountable for the time away. You're accountable for not being able to be responsive to an emergency in the home. You're accountable for all of this. So you're hit for, I don't know for everybody, anybody else, but I know for me, you get hit on both ends for trying to do the right thing and then not being available for anything else. So it becomes a hard balance, but no, client sitting down saying, I'm going to have a kid at this time. That wasn't in the equation. It was reactive for me.
I think I've tried to, especially in my early years, really tried to plan my life out and had a, this is the way things are supposed to go, because I had the goal of, getting my PhD before I turned 30, for whatever reason that was. And major decisions in my life, there were two phone calls that I always made, after I prayed and talked to my mom about it. My Uncle Jerry, who's no longer with us, he passed away 2 years ago, and my dissertation advisor, Dr. Roy Jones, who, from the time I was in my master's program to graduating my PhD, has been a support. I still call him for professional and family decisions to this day. But I remember when I talked to Dr. Jones, Doc, as we call him affectionately, he said, I finished teaching 2 years and I was thinking about going into my PhD program, and Hope, who's my wife, my kindergarten crush, we're thinking about getting married. I'm like, Doc, what do you think about it? He's like, Justin, I'll tell you, it's probably going to be a lot easier if you get your PhD and have kids, then you have kids and get married and do all that. But that's not all that life is composed of. And he said, if I could make any recommendations, because I know love isn't going to stop for work, and you'll regret it if you, stop your life for work. You have to think about what your purpose is. Start your program before you get married. And, life is going to happen. But if you're married to someone who sees your, where you're headed and what your goals are, and they believe in you, you'll make it through. And I'm here to, help you do that. And, even after we got married and we're talking about having kids, he was like, it's going to be harder with kids, but you can make it. And it caused me to graduate a little bit later. So I think it added, about a semester and a half to my program. But, even in that, he talked to me about, what is the reason for you graduating with your PhD before 30, Justin? He's like, you're getting some great experiences. And like I said, he was an excellent mentor, just in terms of, not just letting me do the academics and rush through my program, but making sure that I was networked and, understanding where resources were, so that I wasn't, a starving graduate student going through the program. So he said, if you're not struggling and you're getting these great experiences, why are you rushing it? He said, now take some time and think about what your, what your end goal is, and, what it really takes to get there. And if you're balanced with your family, you're enjoying the space that you're in, and you're, not struggling to live, it might not be in your best interest to rush your way through the program. And, it was just solid advice, just about enjoying the place where you are, and, really taking full advantage of the resources that you have in the space that you're in. And, because you'll never have enough money. You'll never be prepared for having kids. So, once they're there, if you have a vision for where you want to be with your family, you're going to make that happen. And I thought I didn't have time before I had kids, and then I had them. And I just think it made me a lot more efficient in my use of time, and understanding that, I can't wait for the spirit to move for me to start writing and getting things done. But, this is the amount of time I have. This is what I need to get done. I need to get it done now. And that's, that's, an ethic that I have. Like when I have, I work in increments in 25 to 15 minutes. So there, 25, 15 minutes here, and there's an outline that needs to get written, or a paper that I need to read, that, I'm either on my cell phone, or I have my tablet, or I'm taking notes, you know, thinking about these things so that I'm not wasting time and then, you know, getting home and longing for this 2-hour block of time that my kids need in order for them to be developed. So, you know, just really, you know, understanding that, you know, your career isn't your life, and, you know, there's more to your call than your career. Yeah. And trying to, you know, balance that. And, you know, if you're connected with the right people, they're going to help you across that finish line. And I think, you know, even being married, my wife really, you know, gave me perspective on why I was doing what I was doing, and even having my children, it, you know, really motivated me to get through the dissertation, finish it up, because you have a reason for doing this that's beyond you.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. I mean, I love it. You know, all the work that I've done in STEM, I've done it on my time, and I'm like, yes, I can get this going, or I can try and bring as much as I can to my home city. But then when I had a son, I was like, okay, now what I do is for my son.
Yep.
You know, if everyone else gets excited about it or a piece of it, great. But I want to make sure that my child has all the opportunities that he can available to him when he's, you know, of age to do anything. Right. Yes. So it didn't stop me in my STEM journey. It just kind of redirected the reason why I was doing stuff in STEM. So I really love the answers that you guys are giving. And I want to keep on that timeline of time. So, you know, what time does your day start and what time does your day end when it comes to, you know, being a parent?
My alarm clock go off at 4:30 a.m. to get to work. So mine started at 4, and then Monday, I would say Thursday through Monday, it ends whenever my little man gets tired. And sometimes that's 12:30 if he's really wired. If I'm lucky, it ends at 8:30. But you know, with the shower, the bath, well, it was showering or bathing him, washing his hair, and then sitting up and actually having a true conversation with him, to say, how was your day? What did you learn? What did you like? What's your favorite color? You know, who's mommy? Who's daddy? You know, you, Carter, you a blessing. That it's hard to say when it ends sometimes, but I mean, you know, even when he sleeps, you still, as a parent, you still got other things that you got to do. As Dr. Bowler said, you know, squeezing in that those times, sometimes that's 1 o'clock in the morning, trying to write something, trying to jot something down or read something real quick. I don't think it ever ends, really. It's like a forever, ever waking moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're constantly on your mind. For me, like, I'm, you know, pretty close. Like, I wake up at 5 o'clock. You know, try to get some type of, you know, thank, you know, the good Lord for waking me up in the morning, and then, you know, try to get some type of physical exercise in. And then by 5:45, 6 o'clock, you know, first slate of emails before meetings start. So I try to get that 3 hours before my 9 o'clock meetings start, because, you know, being an administrative role, you know, meeting between 9, 5:30, 6 o'clock, you know, the intermittent meetings that are happening there. I try to block off that 2:30 to 5 o'clock period to not have meetings as much, because that's about the time the kids get out of school. So, you know, typically, you know, pick the kids up from school, you know, helping out with homework, you know, having those conversations with them, maybe taking them out to play for a little bit. We sit down for dinner, you know, most days if kids don't have after school activities. So we'll have dinner together, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock. And then, you know, I may take, you know, 45 minutes while they're taking their showers to, you know, work on some items. And then I've always put the kids to bed. So I'll, you know, put the kids to bed, you know, read to my 4-year-old, and then, you know, try to put in another hour and a half, 2 hours, and then, you know, take some time for my wife and I to, you know, relax and maybe, you know, watch a movie or just sit up and talk. and try to get to sleep by, 12 o'clock, 12:30 most evenings, just to make sure that, I'm getting at least, 5-6 hours of sleep every night.
Okay, well, I'm going to throw that PSA out there. It's supposed to be 8 hours of sleep. I know it's hard. I know it's hard. Trust me, I know it's hard.
I was over here doing the math too, Kat.
I was like 12, 30. That's not enough sleep. Right. You know? But I mean, I understand. I completely understand, trying to get that work done in increments in between, because you don't want to take away from your time with your children, right? They're only small once. Yeah, you only get that opportunity to be a parent once. So, making sure that you give them the time, especially when they're out of school. Woo! I mean, I don't know. Mine's is only 2. So I haven't experienced summer break yet. So, I don't know what it's like with summer break and having those activities as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the work day should end at 2, but that's my bias. If they get out of school at 2-3 o'clock, the work day should be done at that time. That's another, we can talk about that at another time.
I agree with you.
Yeah. So, with your children as they're growing up and you want to invest in them and take them with you to what you're doing, right? But how do you feel if maybe your career or even STEM is not for them? How do you encourage?
That's a great question. I can say with my older kid, I can say that he didn't pick the path that I picked. And so with that, I always told him, I said, no matter what you do, I'm always support you. No matter what it is, I just want to make sure you chase your goal, your dream, your passion. Because I know for me, as Dr. Tay, when she asked the question earlier, was it planned? It was more reactive for me that you have to put down goals or dreams because you have to be accountable for your actions. And as a father for me, I never wanted to grow or get resentment for not chasing my goal to be an attorney, which was my true passion. So with that, I was with my kids, I want to make sure that no matter what course they go on, and if they show interest in anything, I want to invest in it as much as possible to encourage them, because I believe that we grew up in a culture, for those of us that are darkly melon, of survival. And in survival, we got in this rhythm or groove that we will suppress or destroy goals that others may want, our successors may want. And so with that, I want to make sure we break a bad chain and say, whatever it is that you want to do, how do I help you get to that? And what do I need to do to help to make sure that you don't lose it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I just think I talk to my kids daily about making good decisions. I think, my role is to, teach them to think critically, and I don't control what their destiny is, like that's already been appointed, but I do have the role of helping them get to where they need to be. So, for me, as long as they're, wonderful people who treat people well and they make great decisions about their life, I think there are wonderful lessons that come from STEM, and there's a lot of, interesting things that happen there. And, even as we evolve, that, there's not these silos of, this is clearly STEM and this isn't. So, we had a physicist who's a jazz artist that, used jazz to explain complicated physics theories, and artists that got into artificial intelligence to develop art. The arts definitely enrich what happens in STEM, and I think that can happen vice versa. So I think my job is to expose them to as many positive things as possible, help them to think critically and make great decisions and treat people well. And, you know, I think if they do those three things, then, you know, I'm happy with, you know, whatever happens with my children.
Amen.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. Thank you. Yeah, because I think a lot of times I'm on the opposite side of the spectrum. Is I love STEM and trying to talk to families about encouraging their kids who are interested in STEM and maybe that wasn't their career choice. And so, you know, just and I, you know, I kind of go down that path. It's just encourage, you know, be there. Right. You don't have to. They don't have to do what you do, but encourage them to be great at what they do. Right. So, OK, I'm off my soapbox. Dr. Tay, you have anything you want
to
add?
I was just going to expand on that, which is because, you know, I'm coming from that side of being that outside the classroom educator as well and trying to encourage, you know, individuals towards at least exploring STEM careers and what STEM means. Right. And seeing the STEM in everything. But the other thing that I was actually thinking about this today before we started our conversation was, you know, how do you encourage these populations of individuals, most of the communities that we actually came from ourselves, you know, and a lot of times even the conversations we've had with our families, it was hard encouraging them and letting them know why it was hard talking about why I decided to go an additional 5 years for a PhD after getting my master's, right? And even, you know, just being in a completely different location and studying one thing, and some of us have messed with experimental models. Imagine telling your family about messing with mice all day, every day to explore whatever that half of the words that, you know, a lot of people in your community may not understand what exactly you're looking at, right? So I think that's the other aspect of that is still being able to encourage, you know, I'm getting from you both that you're still encouraging regardless of their interest or lack thereof for your own careers in looking at yourselves as models and what they take from that. There's a lot of different things. It doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, being CEO, CFO or working with mortgages or, you know, working in bioinformatics and so on, bioengineering and so on. There could be so many other aspects to even just being on time for work and juggling everything and the balance and still showing up as a father, as a husband, as, you know, an educator or whatever else. There's so many different levels to it. So that's what I'm taking from this. And I literally was thinking about this earlier. I was like, why do we continue to encourage individuals to look after us? And I think both of you have provided so many different reasons in telling the little bit that you've told us so far about your story. So I definitely thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just appreciate the opportunity. You know, some of us men, like Dr. Bowler, has accomplished quite a bit and we don't get to tell our story. Oftentimes the father, especially in our culture, is pushed aside when it comes to when we acknowledge a family. It's mom, super mom, mom has done everything, which I take nothing away from mothers. Hear me. I cannot do what a woman can do. Don't even want to experience that. Right? But at the same token, you know, when a man chooses to stand and own his responsibilities and be accountable for his actions, it's hard on, I feel it's hard on us. I remember when
Carter's brother he had a presentation and I didn't have a car.
And when I looked at the time, I was late. I ran over 2 miles as fast as I could to get to his presentation, showing up sweaty and in the back. And when he looked at me, I was like, I'm here, out of breath, but I'm here. And to this day, he will bring that up. He's like, "Dad, I remember when you ran to my presentation." I was like, "I wasn't gonna miss it." But you know, that we fathers, we will do that for our kids because you know, I have this thing where my kids will be better than me at all costs.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, but I take my hat off to Dr. Bowler after all what he accomplished, and he still has that. He's still carving that time in for family.
Take my hat off to you. I think, you know, just, you know, so you put so eloquently just, you know, making sure that you take the time that your kids realize that there's nothing more important to them in this world to you. And, you know, I just remember for myself, like, my father passed away when I was 15 years old, but, you know, I remember the lessons that he taught me, and just even being in middle school, like when he might be in and out of the hospital because he battled with type 1 diabetes, making the time to show up to a basketball game, or, you know, just sitting down and talking to me about, you know, life, that, you know, those were things that, you know, put something in me that, you know, you don't forget those conversations. You don't forget that you just got out of the hospital and you're at my basketball game. Okay. And that makes you, you know, strengthened in some ways that, you know, it's really great that mom is there. But, you know, I think for, you know, boys, like when your dad is there as well, you know, it adds something to, you know, certain aspects of your life, and, you know, strengthens you in different ways. And, you know, just having that balance of, you know, your mother, father, working together as a team, is really important for me, to make sure that my children see that model.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. So it's 6:51. We got less than 10 minutes. So before we go, we got some comments. John said, dads as mentors, powerful. Mm-hmm. Mr. Breckenridge said, do you think STEM will be profitable and useful in the future? Yes. So many firings and the lack of usefulness from these products, these pills and VR headsets are not making any money. Mm-hmm.
I believe STEM will always be profitable and powerful in the future. Will every product that come out be profitable? Probably not, but I mean, every application in finance isn't useful, but that doesn't mean we don't stop trying to make it useful or progress or evolve it so that it becomes something that it's that we can't live without. But I believe STEM is here to stay. We need it. And we just got to be patient. I mean, we got great minds working at it.
Yeah. And like the purpose for STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and, you know, math, which is the sea that they all float on, is to improve the human condition. So yeah, we're not going to stop, you know, trying to improve or enhance what we have. So, you know, I think it's something that's here to stay. Like, we don't, you know, stop, you know, it's like one of those things, if you don't keep evolving or you don't keep moving, you die. And, you know, STEM is, you know, one of those areas where, you know, there'll always be a new technology or a new problem that we're faced with that we're going to be forced to solve. And, you know, STEM is a tool for doing that.
Right. I think that the important thing that both of you brought out, which I hope is taken from your answers, is that the application of these things, I get it that there are some pills and some headsets that where VR is used there aren't making money. But I have seen in a lot of ways where headsets and VR are used in medicine in order to decrease these invasive surgeries that cost so much in order for us to, like you said, improve health and improve the lifespan of humans. So a lot of applications are working out. They may not be the things that we hear a lot about, unfortunately, but there are the things that we would hear about are the VRs that the kids take home and the pills that don't work. So those are the things we do hear about, unfortunately, when it comes to STEM.
And
go ahead.
I talk to students a lot about failing forward. That's like the greatest lesson that we learn. And, you know, STEM and part of what we do as life is failures, that, like, if we deny ourselves failure, we don't learn. So, like, you know, we have to have products that don't work and, you know, things that don't sell because we understand maybe this didn't work. I think it was Thomas Edison that said, you know, I discovered, you know, 99 ways that, you know, the light bulb didn't work. That was probably, you know, just as important as the one way that did. So like, we're going to, you know, go through that process, and that experimentation, failure, you know, understanding how we redesign and, you know, bring something new in order to solve the problem. So, you know, I think that's a continual thing.
Absolutely. But I think that it takes a different perspective, right? And I think even this, every field in STEM is trying to figure out how to make sure we are emphasizing that troubleshooting piece just as much as we're emphasizing the success of the research or of the STEM innovation and so on. And unfortunately, what we have been putting out through history is just successful measures, things that have come out with successful resolve or solutions, rather than we did this and it did not equal this, which still gives us a piece of the puzzle. And we're not making sure we highlight that enough. And that's something we're talking about that at NIH. So I know for sure a lot of people across the board are talking about that. So I'm glad for that question because it brings up the bigger piece of this puzzle, which is bringing up the success as well as the failures and understand that all these things connect in order for us to keep advancing forward.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for that. I mean, I'll just add really quickly. I mean, the blue pill wasn't made for erectile dysfunction. It was a failure in what it was made for. Yeah. And then they sold it for erectile dysfunction. So there are failures that work, right? But it's in the research and what you're going to get from it. And John said, environmental justice is STEM, hazard mitigation is STEM, environmental health is STEM. I mean, we are doing so much damage to the planet. And there's so much work in STEM that needs to be looked at right now. So in the last few minutes, what is the last things that you guys want to share? Mm-hmm. And if someone is interested in you learning more about you, how can they find you?
Great question. if anybody wanted to get in touch with me, it is Savari Williams at gmail.com. And I will spell out Savari because it's not a common name. It's C-A-V-A-R-E, all lowercase, Williams, no underscore, no spaces, at gmail.com. And then the last thing I would say is I would piggyback off of Dr. Bowler. Fail forward. Don't stop.
Thank you. And, I'm on LinkedIn, so you can find me, Dr. Justin Ballinger. On LinkedIn. I think I'm pretty easy to find there. I think I'm typically one of the first to pop up. I think I would just encourage, individuals to, continue to fail forward and explore that, this is, part of the reason that we're put here is to discover and explore and, find, what our purpose is. And I think STEM gives us some amazing tools to do that.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Thank you. Dr. Tay, you have anything you want to add?
No, I'm just going to say thank you both so much for being here. You definitely provided a lot of answers to questions that I've always had lingering in my head and never had the right people to ask. And I know a lot of the audience members have benefited from these conversations as well. I just want to encourage and lift you up and say continue to do what you're doing. If all the things that you said today, if you're really doing those things, I know it's only going to bring out more success within your families and your careers. So if there's anything I can help with, please let me know. But I will, if I can lift you up in spirit and energy, definitely doing that.
Yes. Well, thank you all for joining us tonight. Thank you, everyone who had questions or comments. Alana said she enjoyed listening. It was a great episode. So thank you all for everything. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday night. I want to give the rest of your Wednesday back to you. So I will see everyone on another day and another time. Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Good night.